Who says I can't get stoned? Turn off the lights and the telephone. Me in my house alone. Who says I can't get stoned? Who says I can't be free from all of the things that I used to be? Rewrite my history. Who says I can't be free? It's been a long night in New York City. It's been a long night in Baton Rouge.
All right, what's up, and welcome back to another episode of the Bounce Back Bogey Podcast. I'll be your host today. My name's Braden, and with me are Craig and Mike. We're going to talk a little Genesis, little Riviera action. Spieth got DQ'd for incorrect scorecard. We'll touch on that, some of the holes at Riv, state of Tiger's game and his health, and get into some betting and cancel culture. But let's start with some weekend stuff. Mike, what do you get up to this week? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I didn't do much this weekend. Watched the Genesis on Saturday, Sunday. Had a nice, took kind of like a half day off today. Played some golf. Played okay. Shot 2 under. Bogeyed the last hole for 2 under. So overall, pretty good day. But again, my new lab putter is not cooperating with me. So,
uh-oh. Good stuff. Craig, what did you get up to?
Same thing as Mike. Pretty chill weekend. Yesterday I played some golf with like my buddies that don't golf much, which is arguably better than golfing with your buddies that do golf just for like entertainment value. But yeah, we went up to Surrey Golf Club. It's one of the only places I think in the lower mainland I probably haven't played. Mike, have you played there?
Yeah, I played my high school alumni golf tournament there.
I think it's sick. I think it's a good golf course. I think it's tragic. It doesn't have grass on it, but I think the layout's really fun. And then
it's got some good holes.
Yeah, I had my typical round there. I threw 7 holes. I had 7 putts, and I was 3 under. And then I came in with a smooth 1 over par. So I had a fun day. I have driver demons again. Like this is a reoccurring thing for me. I play golf with driver demons way more than I don't play golf. Like I hate driver, man. I feel like golf would be so, it looks so fun just being short and straight. It looks like
it's also
golf
fun.
Just,
it's really fun being long and straight too.
Yeah. But that's, I don't need, like, I just, all I want is swings that aren't impeded. Like if I don't have to hit it around a tree or under a tree or my swing's fucked up, like golf would just be so much more fun. But yeah, that and then just went for brunch this morning, and Vancouver's crawling with they/thems with blue and pink hair now. It's crazy. There's so many out there.
Oh no.
So it was pretty eventful. It was good.
Nice. Is it family day in BC?
Yeah, it is.
On Monday? Okay, cool. Yeah, it was family day here. My parents got back from Australia this past week. My sister lives there. She married an Aussie. So they were down there for a bit and just got back this week and had to come see their grandchild, their first grandchild. So they were here this week. So I didn't get to watch much golf. Like Craig, I don't think he watched much golf either. So we'll be battling and relying on Mike a little bit for the Genesis recaps. Cause I spent some time with them, went for walks, didn't do too much, but it was on in the background as we were installing baby gates at the top of our stairs, so Theo won't fall down the stairs. So
there's not a golf podcast out there that listens to less or watches less golf than we do.
Hey, as long as we got one third of us watching it, we can make it work. So let's move right into it. Genesis Invitational at Riviera. Riviera is sick, I think. I thought LACC was pretty good for US Open venue. I know it got a lot of flack, especially after Wyndham hit his tee ball on 18, like way right, and it found the fairway. But I thought it was pretty good, but it would have been cool if Riviera hosted it, because we get that. I find it nice when majors host courses that we see on the PGA Tour host majors. So I think it would have been cool if Riv got that US Open. But in any case, it's fun to see it year in and year out. This year it was a signature, elevated, designated, who knows what kind of event it was, but it had 70 or 80 guys. And yeah, Hideki out of nowhere Final round 62. Just blitzes the field with 30 on the back nine. That's some golf. Mike, what were your takes on the week here?
The weekend was actually a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be kind of a boring event because I think Cantlee had a 5-shot lead going into the weekend. Like
Yeah.
he started 64, 65, which is just insanely good golf out there. And then I heard he got the flu on Sunday, apparently that's why he played bad. Apparently. Yeah, Hideki just went off. One of the best things I like about watching Hideki is that you have absolutely no clue on if he's hit a good shot or a bad shot when the ball's in the air. I think he hit two shots just like 6 and 8 inches on the back nine, and maybe one time for sure he let go of his club, and the other time he didn't look very happy either.
Yeah.
And you look up and the ball is about to roll into the hole. So that guy, he's won the Masters, he's won RIV, he's won a lot of big events. He's a superstar over in Japan.
Yeah, mega.
My favorite thing about Hideki doing that and like not knowing whether he's hitting a good shot or a bad shot is when the announcers are like, he flushed that. It's not like he gets away with a bad swing. They're so confused. They're like, that was hit on the screws and he's pissed off and it goes to like a foot.
So is he doing it on purpose then to throw the cameras off?
Has to be.
He
He's he,
also,
Hideki's the ultimate troll. He
yeah,
actually
he
speaks
also.
fluent English.
He came off the course, and I think one of his first quotes in the media tent was that he did not hit it very good on Sunday.
Oh my.
Yeah.
That's savage. After a 62, bogey-free 62, didn't hit it well. How are you?
Hideki Chrisologo.
Love it. Yeah, I know he used to battle and still kind of does a little bit the putter demons. Like he used to flush kind of like what Scotty's doing now, just absolute flushing it around everywhere. This was in the late 2010, like 2016, 17, 18. Flushed it everywhere and just couldn't get the ball in the hole. And then I guess this is, I just looked up his stats earlier this year. He's still losing strokes on the green. So tee to green, doing great, the Scotty method, and then just in the hot weeks with her. And that's the key to success, because this week he gained like 4 strokes putting. So
I will
that's
say he had like a 3.5, 4 footer on 18 to kind of to close the day, and it was a little bit of a slider, and it was nailed. So it was right in the heart. Stroke
Yeah.
looked good. Looked very different than how you were talking about it a few years ago.
Another guy that has battled the putter demons, Willie Z, with a T2 with the broomstick. And earlier this year, he started with the broomstick and it didn't look that sharp. But now it's starting, it actually looks somewhat competent. Like he's not doing, I won't say looping it, because as long as you're looping it consistently, it used to be just dealer's choice whenever he had a 6 footer, like loop it inside outside, who knows, pause at the top of the putting stroke. I don't know what I'm saying, but yeah, now it looks good. So he is a force to be reckoned with, and there's something about this guy, just watching him hit the ball. I don't know if it's the fact that he's 120 pounds that just makes me just want to watch him play golf, because there's a big difference between watching him play golf and watching, for me, Xander or Cantlee play golf. And maybe it's to do with his putting struggles in the past, but yeah, I love watching Willie Z. So I didn't even realize that Cantlay was sick. It sounds like a few guys were sick, because Tiger pulled out with an illness, and I
Shit
think,
himself.
yeah, he had the Sunday, instead of Sunday red, he had the Sunday brown going on Friday and withdrew. So we
Spieth
can,
signed a wrong scorecard because he was sick, apparently.
yeah, so something's going around.
Did you guys see the memes of the In-N-Out chef?
No. No.
Oh, everyone's blaming him. So it's they were eating the In-N-Out burger, and then it's like suspect number one, and it's the guy flipping the patties on the In-N-Out
Oh,
truck. So
okay.
yeah, I think I'm gonna get into that later, but I think he had
Uh-oh.
something to do with taking out Tiger and taking out the goat Spieth.
Well, we might be sharing our thoughts a little bit later, because I had a similar if we're gonna get into that in cancel culture. But let's get into Tiger's withdrawal. So Tiger comes out, shoots 72, one over on Thursday, and then he's a couple over early in his round, and then I see that you withdrew, and I wasn't able to watch early on Friday because I have a like 9 to 5 Monday to Friday job, so I can't just watch golf all the time. But it looked like he was on his way to missing a cut. Never a good thing for ratings when Tiger's not playing the weekend. But he withdraws with an illness, let's say. That's obviously much, much better news than him withdrawing with a back issue or a knee issue or whatever has lingered for him for the last couple of years. So that was good. But what was scary was all the fire trucks and paramedics and stuff pulling up to the course. But sounds like he's released a statement that he's good, in good health, and he'll be good to go in the future. But did you guys get to watch any of Tiger play Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, the second I walked into the pro shop, I was working on Thursday. The second I walk into the pro shop, I'm like, oh, Tiger's, what was he, even on 18? And then I just see the El Hozel like straight into the trees on the right on 18. And I was like, I'm out, fuck this. Like, I'm a jinx for Tiger. So yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of it. It looks like he's kind of got the same game that he's had the last I don't know, like few years since the Masters. Like he's still got some speed. Swing looks good, but I just want to see him finish a tournament, obviously. I thought I heard he was like hitting it okay. I think he was one under. Was he one under through the front nine?
Let me pull up this scorecard.
Yeah, he was one under on the front nine the first day.
Yeah, like I don't know. He just needs reps. I feel like his game's there, and he definitely seems to be practicing a good amount, but he just can't finish a tournament. Like it's the same story over and over, which sucks. 'Cause I'm still on Team Tiger and thinking that he can win, but only if he's able to get in multiple events in a season, like full events and not having to withdraw,
Yeah,
which is the biggest challenge.
I think he said he wants to play one tournament a month. So that's kind of a good cadence, especially with the majors being every month starting in April. So I think that's good. But yeah, obviously sucks not seeing him finish. He blamed that shank on back spasms though. And this was before the illness. That was on Thursday. He blamed that shank on back spasms. Is that just an excuse or is that legitimate?
I think it's a symptom of incoming food poisoning. So one thing I want to mention before I let Mike go off on Tiger, we're all grown men here. I think we can all say in a safe space that we've had either close encounters or complete encounters of shitting ourselves on the golf course. Correct? So I got a story. So Mike, do you know this one on 10 at VGC?
I don't know if I know it.
I think I've heard it, but go off.
So this is why I feel for Tiger and Spieth, because I knew exactly what they were going through. If you it's amazing they made it to the clubhouse. Oh, I guess Tiger didn't, but I understand why he didn't. He 100% sharted in his pants a little bit. He had to have, because I've been there. And anyway, we were playing VGC. We make the turn, go up number 10. It's a par 5. Hit the tee shot, walking down the fairway. We're about like 200 yards out probably from the tee box, and I'm hit with the back spasm, and like legs are shaking. I'm like, oh God, no, not now. And it's immediate, like I'm gonna shit myself. So I run into the trees. I'm not gonna make it to the clubhouse. Like there's zero chance I can make it 200 yards back. I think I was playing with like Trevor or somebody. He's yelling at me, just like go back to the clubhouse. I run into the trees on VGC, take a fat shit just off the fairway, basically. Used my dirty golf towel to wipe and left a present for the next group. So hopefully no one hit any hot AOC balls into the left trees. Otherwise they were dealing with a hazard. Dude, the towel was just left there. I couldn't do anything. There's just a shitty towel. It's probably still decomposing at VGC.
Probably attracted some bears or some wildlife over there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Mike, you got any
Anyway, Mike,
tiger?
back to your take on Tiger.
Yeah, any tiger thoughts?
Yeah, I saw a stat on Twitter. I can't remember what it was, but I think it was, this isn't exactly what it was, but it was like a number that Tiger was more likely to withdraw after his last accident and his last surgery than actually make a cut, which really hurts. I think since he got into his last accident and his last surgery, his one or both of his legs are just not working properly at all. And it's even if he's practicing a lot, which I don't think he is, it's really hard to account for like a 4-round walking tournament, especially when you're doing practice rounds. It's very hard to just simulate what that's going to be like for his body. And I'm sure he gets out there, and when he's finishing on, the 36th hole or the 54th hole, he's just in so much pain. So I hope that he's taking all the drugs that he can take, and he's gonna make a run at one of the majors. I could care less if he fucking played in any other tournaments other than the majors. I just want to see him in contention on Sunday on one of the big tournaments. One more time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
One
we
more
need
run.
Tiger
Okay.
storing his oxy for the Masters.
Yeah. Take all the drugs, but don't drive. That's the one thing that
Yeah.
like he's rich enough, just hire a full-time driver, man. I don't know why he's getting in trouble driving under the influence sometimes,
I'd
but
take drugs and drive like a fucking champion. So,
Tiger's ruin it for the best of them.
yeah.
Okay, let's stick with Tiger then. Can he win another, let's say PGA Tour event, but specifically a major? Can he win a major? Health, all that.
I think yes. I think it has to come at a course that he's won at and knows really well, where he has a huge advantage over a lot of the field already. And even with that happening, I think not everything, but most things have to go his way. Like, he has to hit it really good. He has to stay healthy during the week, and he has to putt really well. And even if that happens, like, it's not guaranteed that he's gonna win.
Yeah. So I guess the
Yeah.
one course where he has the most knowledge and has won more than anyone else playing right now, Masters. But as we know, the Masters is very undulating, lots of slopes, and is a tough walk. So that kind of works against him,
Yeah.
but the course knowledge works for him. So tough balance. So I always thought like British Open, because it's typically a little flatter and easier walk, but
I think the travel kills them a little bit, though. No, I think they've talked about that in the past, where the long plane ride and stuff, that I guess when you turn 48 and you've had 15 back surgeries, those are pretty killer, right? So
And
yeah.
coming from someone who's battled like hip injuries and back injuries while they playing in like cold, rainy, gross conditions is not very easy on your back either. Like that, you have a much better chance of it seizing up and something happening when it's like 0 degrees and cold and fucking rainy.
And
Yeah.
long rounds too. You're playing like a 5.5 hour round. You have to sit there and yeah,
Yeah.
everything tightens up.
True. Okay.
I
So
think he can win again though.
you think he
Like,
can't? Yeah, but he's probably an underdog to win again. Like, even if we could say he can compete for 10 more years and there's only four majors a year, 40 majors split out among the top guys. It's an uphill battle for sure, but I
yeah.
think we're on the same camp that we want him and the whole golf world wants him to be there on Sunday on the back nine. Yeah, I think the only person that would be rooting for someone else would be that person's mother, but yeah. All right. Obviously, we know Hideki, great round on Sunday, kind of saved us from a Cantlay win. No one wants to see that fuck win. Or Xander, I don't like him. I know you guys like him, but let's back it up to round one. And let me ask the originator of this podcast, the OG, Craig Titterington, what's your definition for this podcast name, Bounce Back Bogey?
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about this before, but what it is a bounce back bogey is when you make a tragic number, like a double, a triple, something big, and then you follow it up with a nice redeeming bogey right after, and it really settles you down for the rest of your round. So now you're ready to roll, you're cooking, and then now you can rattle off some mistake-free golf, couple birdies, maybe an eagle, and hopefully, yeah, no more of those biggies.
Yeah, you're absolutely cooking. You see it all the time with those absolute hacks in junior tournaments where it's like triple, double, triple, and then they hit that bounce back bogey baby and they're rolling. And let me read you Hideki's back nine starts. Hole 10, birdie, hole 11, birdie, hole 12, double bogey, loses that momentum from those birdies, but bang, bounce back bogey on 13, baby, bounce back bogey. And then he goes on to win the goddamn golf tournament. And that's what this podcast is built on, that bounce back bogey momentum. So good on Hideki. Kick-started his tournament with a little bounce back bogey on the back nine on Thursday. You can't teach that. That's just good hard playing.
That's America, baby.
That's America from Japan. One again, Scotty, I just wanted to, this is like week in, week out now, leads the field tee to green and just cannot get the ball in the hole. It is must-see TV whenever he's got a five-footer now, and it's amazing. So I think he's got to get canceled and go broomstick. You just can't keep trying the same thing. Do you think he will, though? Will he try something, or is he just stubborn and he's just going to let it ride?
You touched on something that I was going to touch on later.
Okay.
So I'm just gonna leave that for now.
I love
Has
it.
He,
I love
does
it.
He see a putting coach? Like, has he seen anybody? Do they ever talk about that on the broadcast?
Yeah, like I remember last year during a tournament, he was working on his putting, either in a practice round or after a round in the tournament, and he was getting like visibly frustrated with his putting coach because he could not, even on the putting green, he was missing putts from like 5-6 feet, and he was so frustrated.
I really understand that with a swing coach. I can't even fathom that with a putting coach. Like, I don't know.
Oh man. That's okay. I wanted to get into a little bit of the golf course at Riviera. I want to start with hole one. Hole one is basically, it's a par four now. It plays at like 4.05, like barely over four strokes, and it's a par five on the card and has been for all of time. But when you guys are playing a tournament and say the wind's really strong one way, like downwind on a par five, and it's basically playing like a par four, but it's par five on the card, does that change your mentality and make it easier, or is there more pressure to make sure you birdie or even eagle that hole? Mike, let's hear your thoughts.
I look at scoring a little bit differently. Like, I don't look at par very much.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to play a course to shoot as low as I can based on what I think the appropriate number should be.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of if you told me it was a par four or a par five at Riviera, I would play that hole and I would hit shots off the tee and into the green based off of what I think would be the best thing for me to make a good number on that hole.
Yeah.
Good yeah. Stuff, right? I'm going to fuck up the hole regardless. So it doesn't really matter. Downwind par five, I'm probably not finding the fairway. My game is, it doesn't matter the hole. Like I can birdie like a hard hole. I think my game's so luck. Like, me driving rounds where I drive it well, it's like I'm trying to hit a cut off the left side of the fairway. I toe bang it out there. It starts at the middle of the fairway and just goes dead straight. Like, the ball doesn't do what I want. Some days I just get lucky and somehow it finds the fairway. And I hit it long enough that like I can, like still score on par fives and all that. So, downwind, I don't think that far. I'm not there yet.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I have a question for Craig. Sorry to cut you off, Bray.
Yeah.
The first hole at Capilano Golf Club is actually quite an easy par five, if I remember.
Yeah.
What do you think your scoring average is on that hole with trees left and trees right?
Okay. So just to be clear, I don't know why we're referring to Capilano. That's not necessarily the course I work at, but if I were to be around that course a lot, the scoring average, sorry, what was the question? Oh boy. Re-say that again.
What's your scoring average on hole one at Cap?
Okay, so first of all, it's a par four now. It's officially a par four.
Oh, is it?
My scoring average probably, I don't know, like 4 point. I make four there quite a bit. The fairway's decently wide. It is a hole that is so much more difficult in the summer. So we had the Patco Sam, which is one of the biggest amateur tournaments. Sorry, not we. Capilano just happened to have the Patco Sam this summer, which is one of the biggest amateur tournaments in the world. Surprisingly, I think one played the toughest hole on the golf course by quite a bit. So the fairway, it's so tough because the fairway, if you haven't played there before, it slopes to the right on the right, like on the middle, and then slopes to the left on the left side. So like if you're not right in the middle of the fairway, basically, a lot of balls were kicking into the shit. But yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty standard hole for the most part, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wanted to ask that because I think Mike hit the nail on the head there. Like, it shouldn't matter what the par is. You should play the hole without par in mind. The problem is, as humans, we need something to benchmark against, and par is just easy to do. And I see this more with my, like, I'll call them less talented golfers, where if they're playing a hard par four, and they hit a squirrely drive, hits a tree, or I don't know, hits it. They hit it like 230 into the left rough, and they got 230 in again. And there's bunkers short of the green, and they're you can have like a 50-yard bunker shot. If it's a par five and they're like 240 out, they were more likely to lay up from there and not leave themselves that awkward 50-yard bunker shot. But if it's a par four, just in their mind and most people's minds, they're like, yeah, obviously I'm gonna go for it, or not even go for it. I'm gonna try to hit the green because it's a par four. But it shouldn't matter, is what it boils down to. You should play the hole how you should play the hole, regardless of the par. I know that happened a lot in British Opens, where if the wind, like they built the courses for the prevailing wind, and if it flips, sometimes you're going to have par fives that play like under a scoring average of four, and then par fours that play like at 4.8. So, yeah. Hole four, though, wanted to touch on this one. It's pretty controversial. I know a lot of players hate it. It's about 230 yards. There's a bunker short of the green, and the green slopes away from them. And there's cucuya grass in front of the green that stop pretty much any ball. Even if you hit a lower ball in there, you got to get a really lucky bounce to get it just rolling out of that cucuya and onto the green. And if you try to hit a high, soft cut, still, your ball is going to bound to the back of the green. What are your thoughts on that? And if you're playing a par three, should you have a good chance of hitting the green? Like, is it fair?
What I'll say is all the best par threes in the world are not long par threes. So to start off, generally like 230 yards, what is it, 230, something like that, aren't the best holes. Basically for that reason, often that's the case, is the margin for error is so small. Like it's such a difficult shot to hit, landing it just on the green and then having it stop. It sucks at like the way it's designed doesn't necessarily reward a good shot, I feel like. That being said, I don't know. I like hard holes. I can't have the take of we need really penalizing US Opens and then shit on holes like that. So I do kind of like it from a fan perspective, because again, we like to see pros struggle.
I'm not a huge fan of holes at par three holes where, like, especially from a longer distance, good shots aren't rewarded. You can hit a really good shot into that green and, you know, seven, eight, nine, maybe 9 times out of 10, it's probably going to bound off the green, especially if you're playing Riviera when it's super firm. The other thing I'll say is that it's really the cucuya in front of the green makes it a worse hole, unfortunately, because if you do hit a good shot, you're trying to land it maybe half a yard to a yard onto the green to make it roll out to the middle of the green or to the back of the green. And if you miss your spot by a yard or half a yard, you are missing the green short because you're not getting a bounce up. So I think it's a like Craig, and I think Craig actually nailed it on the head. I think a lot of the best par threes in the world are shorter holes.
Yeah. Seven
One.
at Pebble really stands out for that. I will push back and say if every par three was a short hole, though, then they wouldn't be good. I like when a course has a good mix, like one long par three, 220 to whatever, kind of two in the middle, maybe 175 to 200-ish. 200 might be a little long, but 175, 195, and then one short one, like 140. Give yourself a wedge in your hand or so. I think when there's a good mix, then it's kind of fun. But I do really like your guys' point of when good shots aren't rewarded, when you hit a 9 out of 10 shot and it ends up in the same spot as a 5 out of 10 shot, that like that's where it's not a good hole. When every ball is going to the back of the green, then it's not that fun. Then it's a short game contest, which it's fine to test different skills, but if you're just gonna eliminate the skill of hitting it off that tee shot or hitting it off that tee, then that's not a good golf hole, I think. So
One really quick point I have on that hole is I wonder if it was designed more back when the ball spun a lot more. So, like when you had a Bellotta, right? My understanding is that you could hit a 2 iron and you could get the thing to spin to the moon and stop pretty quick. So, maybe it's a better hole when it was like 220 or 210. I'm assuming it used to be a little bit shorter and it was designed so that you had to flush a long iron and that thing could stop on the green a little bit easier versus now. I would imagine it's just a little bit tougher to get it to stop. Plus, I don't know, firmer greens now, I believe, faster greens and a ball that spins less, right? So.
Good point. Good point. But overall, I think for right now, it's just not a good hole. But let's move on to a hole that I do think is very good. But it is kind of polarizing because I know in years past, especially I know Rory's had some comments about it in the past and some other guys as well. Hole 10, drivable hole. I think it's super exciting because almost everyone goes for it now. And this is the hole that Scott Fawcett's decade strategy, I guess I'll call it, of a kind of expected value of what you can expect to score from different spots on the hole has really taken this hole by storm. Where 15 years ago, I want to say about half the field laid up, and now it's maybe one or two guys in a field of 70 that are laying up on this hole. But basically, if you miss it to the right, it's like, I don't know, 300 or so. You want to hit it on the front left of the green or just short left of the green, and then you have the whole green to chip up on. And I think that's super fun. I think what people don't like about it, though, is that you just got to hit a good shot, but then also kind of get lucky that it doesn't get behind one of those two trees left and you're just playing a dispersion game. Like you hit a good shot, but it could get fucked anyway.
The cliche of like a risk reward par four is actually like a pretty good cliche for shorter holes, because I think there needs to be a question in your mind of whether you should be going for it or not. I don't like drivable par fours where everyone is just like, okay, I'm gonna hit this. I can hit it wherever I want. I'm just gonna chip from there. And then I'm going to try to get up and down, or I'm going to hit onto the green and try and two putt. I think the good thing about that hole is that you are either hitting, if you're a longer guy, you're hitting a 3 wood or a driver, and you're still having to hit it into a spot that's probably 15 to 20 yards wide. And if you don't, you're scrambling to make par, which I think makes it a really good hole. And if you do hit a good drive within that 15 or 20 yard gap, you have a good chance to get up and down. So I think it's a really good hole. I don't. And I think it's a little bit, at times it's a little bit harder than some risk reward holes, but I don't think that makes it a bad hole. I actually think it makes it a better hole.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I don't even the I guess yeah, I don't see the problem with it at all, to be honest. I think it's a good hole. Anyone that complains about it is a little pussy. So that's like my only take. Rory complained about that hole.
He did last year. He said something needs to change because it does slope. So the bat, when they put the pin in the front, it is relatively easy. You could lay up or go for it, but I think everyone goes for it especially when it's in the front. When they put it in the back, it's actually pretty tough to get close to because the green kind of slopes off the bunker. And so if you're not far enough left to play it kind of into the right side of the green and have it play down the slope, it's actually really hard to get to. And so I think that brings a lot more luck into play, let's call it, because there's those two trees on the left where if you kind of miss your spot a little bit, and it's not even missing your spot, like the best players still have a dispersion with their 3 woods and drivers. So, of, I don't know, like 65 yards is what Scott Fawcett said. says at 300 yards. So that's really wide, and you're hitting it into a 20-yard gap. So I think that's kind of what Rory's referring to. I don't know exactly. But on the whole thing about Mike's point about whether you have a decision whether to lay up or not, it used to be a decision, but now everyone's going for it. I don't think that makes it a bad hole. I think it makes for some really fun theater, especially like Luke List leading going into the back nine and just hit a terrible golf shot. We know you cannot hit it right. You hit it left, and if you don't hit it in a good spot, then you're playing for par, and that's fine. Like it's you play aggressively off the tee, and then you can battle for par if you need to. But he hit it right, and that's just dead because then you got to deal with that bunker. And in years past, you see guys go bunker to bunker to bunker, just back and forth the Saddam Hussein ball.
One of the reasons I love watching Riv is because like they show the 10th hole a lot. Like I like seeing number 10. It's fun to watch.
Let's move on. One more Riv topic. I know we've been here for a while, but Spieth disqualification for signing an incorrect scorecard. That's been when you start playing junior golf and in college golf and into the pro levels, at all levels of golf, you keep someone else's score. You're supposed to write down your own score. And then at the end of the round, you verify your own score against the score that someone else kept of yours. Spieth apparently had the shits, signed the scorecard, left the scoring area, and one of the scores was wrong and was disqualified. Is that too harsh of a penalty? And or should that even be a thing at the PGA Tour where there's shot link, volunteers everywhere, and we can pretty much see everyone's ball most of the time? Craig, what do you think?
Yeah, no, it's not too harsh of a rule at all. We live in this world now where people don't like to take ownership for their actions. Like I should just be able to drink and drive and run over a family and oh, I'll go to jail for a day. Like, no, that's you signed an incorrect scorecard. It sucks that you had the shits. I don't know, own up to it, right? We need to be tough on crime and we need to be tough on signing incorrect scorecards. So it sucks. Jordan was having a great year, pretty good golf tournament. I think he was six under something like that. He was like very much still in the tournament. So, but yeah, I mean, it's something he's done his whole career, signing scorecards. It's unfortunate he had the shits, and I don't know, In-N-Out Burger will get you sometimes. So.
I have two thoughts on this. So the first one is that I think he had like a he had a bad run of luck where he doubled 18. He was a little bit hot-headed that day. He was sick. He had to go take a shit, like Craig said. He probably rushed through his scores. He didn't check everything, and he left the scoring tent. With that said, I think the way that they keep each other's scores is fine, but I don't see a reason why once you leave the scoring tent and you realize that a score is wrong, that the penalty is disqualification. Like it has nothing to do with the round that you just played. Like it has nothing to do with the actual golf or the actual sport. And it has everything to do with just writing down the number or trusting that someone wrote down your scores correctly. And I get that it's on you to check that everything's correct, but I just like at a PGA Tour level or like at a tournament level where you have scores and everything, I don't understand why it's not that hard to just be like, okay, yeah, you made a mistake. Let's just go back and change it, and your score is going to be what you actually shot.
Do you think some guys, how many P reads out there do you think would be accidentally making mistakes all the time trying to get away with something then? Because the PGA kind of sets the standard, right? So it trickles down and
I don't think it would be any different at all.
you don't think
Really?
so?
I don't
No,
know.
not at all.
Like at a signature event, no, but there's at other events you don't see everyone's.
I know, but give me a scenario where someone's just gonna blatantly cheat like that. They
All the
don't not
time.
cheat. They don't not cheat because someone else is keeping their score.
Well, I
People would potentially try to get away with stuff, I think, at every level. And the PGA, they're
why
not.
does somebody else keeping your score have anything to do with you trying to get away with something?
No, you could be trying to fuck someone over. So I think this would apply to like 0.001% of golfers in professional golf at the highest level. Like, I don't think it'll happen, but like what Craig's saying, there are Patrick Reeds out there who could do this, where you intentionally write down a five instead of a four for someone, and especially if you know they had a rough day and you're competing with them on order of merit or something and want them to get DQ'd, you write it down wrong, they don't look at it close enough, and they get DQ'd.
I
Yeah,
don't know.
but
As soon as I see someone with a back spasm and a leg quiver in the scoring tent, I'm fucking with their scorecard because I know they have to shit. So then, boom, they sign for 3 strokes higher. Wait, no, I got that
oh,
wrong.
wait, yeah. No, I made a bad point because Mike's saying that they don't get DQ'd at this point. Okay, well,
Yeah.
we just made Mike's point.
You just made my point. I was trying to connect the dots.
Well, that's what happens when we record at 11 p.m. my time.
Sometimes you get a little lost in your own argument, but I still stand strong that I don't think the rules or anything should change. I think they're there for a reason. My argument was originally a little bit different than Bray's anyway, but then I tried backing up Bray because he was on team me, so.
Yeah, I don't even know. I think DQ is such a harsh penalty. To your point though, Mike, about you leaving the scoring area and you realize it's wrong and coming back, you shouldn't sign the card until you know it's right. So if he had the shits, he could go shit first and then come back. And it kind of holds up the guys that probably want to go out for dinner in LA and whatever. And Jordan Spieth's a good guy and probably didn't want to hold everyone up, so he just signed his card to get on with it. But it's a professional golf tournament. Do what you got to do and make sure your shit's right when you sign your card.
No, I understand that, and he should have checked it more thoroughly. I just think that, like, it could have been like, it doesn't matter when you leave the scoring tent. As soon as you leave the scoring tent, your score is submitted. So it could be like 30 seconds after, or a minute after, or an hour after you realize that you signed a wrong scorecard. I don't think it really changes anything. The penalty, I think, is too harsh.
So what should it be? Two shots? One shot? Slap on the
Don't think it
wrist?
should be anything.
Oh.
Come on. No,
I don't
then
think it should
that
be anything.
causes so many issues.
It causes no issues.
Mike, there has to be a punishment for a crime.
What's the crime? You're bad at math?
Some people will try to get away. I think some people would like
Yeah.
try to get away
Yeah,
with
but
stuff.
that's get you don't understand what you're saying.
How?
No, I get it now. I get it now. So maybe
If you
not.
try to get if you try to get away if you try to get away with something. So, say you try to get away with something and you sign for a score that's lower than what you actually shot. Someone in your group is going to know that you shot something else and they're just going to say, hey, they're going to say later, hey, this is a score that you made. If you blatantly do that and cheat, then that is, I think you're overestimating the amount of people that are actually try to do that.
No, I think it's very, very small. But if there's no repercussions, then people will try to do it. And it might not happen at the PGA Tour level, but the PGA Tour does set the standard, and there's not going to be shot link at every professional event on lower tours or Korn Ferry or whatever. So you can't just rely on knowing what people shot. And some guys don't know. Like if your score shows up as 70 the next day, they'll be like, oh, that's weird. I thought you shot 71, but I'm not 100% sure. And there's no real way to verify that at this point.
Mike, you know who would really like, and not to get political, because I don't like bringing up politics on a golf podcast, but you know who would really like your take on this is our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who I know you're going to vote for come the fall.
I don't think you guys make a good point. I don't think you could do this at like lower tours, but on a PGA tour where you're like, I think you're virtually certain about what guys shoot almost 100% of the time. I think that the penalty is too severe.
Yeah. I guess though, like shot link data does sometimes mess up. So you're reliant on volunteers and people that should know golf, but don't necessarily like volunteers could be anyone that that week that wants to be there. So if you're
Yeah.
saying you know what they shot, you do, or your playing partner, I don't know, might be pissed and just trunk slam after a Friday round and not care and not care to protect the field that he knows you shot around higher than he actually did.
Yeah, you've changed my stance a little bit. You
Yeah.
guys are, yeah, that makes sense.
I was originally, when it first happened, I was like, this is ridiculous. It should not happen on the PGA Tour where they even need scorecards. But I've kind of changed it now because at some point there it does set the standard and you can't just cut it off for the PGA Tour only because the PGA Tour owns lower tours and it's
Yeah.
just it
Yeah.
has to
Yeah, they
be
set the
consistent.
standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. That's a dub for we'll give that dub to C Tit. Do you guys have any specific stories of that happening to you guys though? Because so my wife, Sabrine, she's a better golfer than me. She played Division One golf, Minnesota. Did
Yeah,
not
she's
happen to
very good.
her. Yeah, she's pretty good. She beats me if we play the same tees, which is somewhat embarrassing, but I'll wear it. She's pretty good. She had a teammate. I won't name her name here. She had it happen to her twice in a college. In different college events, her coach was absolutely furious with her. And one of those, so she, yeah, happened once and then happened a second time at the Big Ten Conference Championship where she got disqualified for signing an incorrect scorecard. So pretty significant stuff. Has that happened to you guys or played with anyone that's happened?
I have extreme like OCD about checking my score, so I'll just like I'll make I like double triple check to make sure I'll like add it up a certain way, and then I'll put my numbers next to their numbers, make sure those match, and then add it up again, and just do like a couple extra things just to make sure that it's correct. I think like the majority of the time, it's people. Either they're angry in the scoring tent and they're not checking things, or they're just getting lazy with it.
Yeah, I've never been DQ'd for signing for like a lower score. I'm the same way. Like I'll triple check my scorecard over and over. But I have signed for a higher scorecard when I was pissed off and just like trying to get out of the scoring tent, just like here, take my fucking card, sign off, kind of being like that guy. And I think I signed for like an 83 instead of an 82 or something. Didn't
So
matter. I wasn't cashing
it
a
mattered.
check, so it
Yeah.
didn't. Yeah.
You were the five guy on a five counts four kind
Yeah.
of a
Yeah, if it was
quality round.
college golf, I was definitely the fifth guy, which I was quite used to in college anyway, so.
This might be a dumb question, or it might be the weed I smoked earlier. I'm not sure. But do you think that it's fair to get disqualified for signing a lower card, but also fair to be able to keep playing if you sign for a higher score? Or should you be disqualified for signing a wrong scorecard in both cases?
I could see the argument actually kind of being made. Like, let's say you had a buddy and you knew how the points were working out or something on the PGA Tour. And if you signed for a higher scorecard, you both kept your card. Like, could you imagine if something like that ever happened? It never would.
Yeah.
But that would be the only argument I think you could make for a DQ for signing for a higher scorecard.
Is that what the
Yeah.
rule is? I wasn't even 100% sure. So
You
if you
can sign for a higher you can sign for a higher score and be fine.
and then it stays, you can't.
You just eat it.
It just stays, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I
Sweet.
hope. Otherwise, I'm supposed to be DQ'd from probably a couple tournaments.
Nice. All right, let's move on from Riv here. We don't need to discuss this, but I wanted to mention that David Puig plays on the LIV, went and played an Asian Tour event and won it, gets into the British Open. Top three guys got into the British Open. There's a lot of guys on LIV that are complaining about the OWGR not getting them points that were not at this golf tournament. You cannot be arguing that about not getting into majors and not taking advantage of the opportunities that you have to get into majors. So I just wanted to highlight that. And also, this guy, young Spanish golfer on LIV, this win gives him, I know it's Asian Tour, so we don't like, I didn't watch it, but I was kind of following along because there was a Canadian that was leading after three rounds, Jared Dutoit, played some golf with him as a junior, knew him quite well, haven't spoken to him in a few years, but we'll have to rekindle that and get him on the pod at some point. But he was leading after three rounds, kind of didn't have a great fourth round. But this win kind of David Puig gives some context, and that's something that we discussed previously about LIV getting guys that were young future stars that we don't really have the context for. And so it's kind of this like you want to get that young talent, but without the platform of winning on the PGA Tour or something, they don't really you don't really have the context. It's like I'm watching LIV, but I don't know who these guys are, kind of thing. So
Yeah.
anyway, this guy getting into the British Open, good for him. Kind of shame on the rest of the LIV guys that want to get into majors that don't have status. Kind of weird move, but yeah, let's move on again to betting segments. So this past week, kind of controversial with my picks at Riviera. I'll just do a quick recap. My two bets were Tiger to miss the cut and Spieth to miss the cut. The two guys that had kind of they both didn't play the weekend, so I'd argue that I fucking won both of them. But Tiger's MC or Tiger's withdrawal voids that bet. So that bet is voided. But Spieth MC, I won't lie, I didn't get this bet in, so I don't officially know how it's awarded. I'm claiming a W though. He didn't play golf on the weekend, and you don't make the cut if you don't finish your round, and he didn't withdraw and he didn't officially finish his round by signing his card. So I'm claiming a W.
Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold
If
on.
I
You're
it, no,
gonna
if I
claim
hear
the
back
first
from
bet dub. There's no way you're gonna do this, right?
Okay, I'm claiming a W right now, but in future weeks, I'm reaching out to a betting firm. I'm saying, like, how would you award these two bets? Tiger miscut and Spieth miscut. I already think the Tiger one is just void. Like, I get my money back. How would you award this bet? If they say it's void, I won't claim a dub. But for now, I'm claiming a dub because I think it's a dub.
I think we
I
put it
think you're
under
getting that
protest and
taken
we put
away
it
from
on
you.
hold. I think we're
Yeah.
there's no way you're
God
claiming
damn
the
it.
first
Okay.
W like that.
I'll put it on. I'll void it for now. But I'm coming back to claim that dub in future weeks. So.
If you go on PGAtour.com and click on leaderboard and go to Spieth's name, it does not say MC, it says DQ.
But does he have a round three or round four score? He
Yeah,
has a
but that
round
can
one and
happen
round two score.
multiple ways, and you just bet on the one.
Tiger
I don't think
does.
he doesn't have a round two score.
Yeah, he does. On PGAtour.com, it says 66-73.
But did he shoot 73?
Well, I don't know. Okay, fine. The bet's void. God damn it. So I didn't lose any money this week. Sucks for you guys, because let me run through your bets. Let me see here. Well, Craig bet half the field and somehow still didn't win. He took Rory Hoa, Morikawa, Scheffler, Day, and Tiger. I guess Tiger we could void. We'll avoid that
Day
one.
was having a pretty good week, and then I don't know what he finished.
And Michael, Justin Thomas to win. MC Hammer in an 80
Yeah.
person, 50 man cut field.
I was so
He was
confident about that
confident
pick,
about it
dude.
too.
I was.
Yeah. Anyway, we just finished the best stretch of golf on the PGA Tour season, aside from the four majors and the Players. So that really fucking sucks because next couple weeks kind of duds. We're on to Mexico Open at Vedanta. I'm gonna pull a Craig and sprinkle a few guys here. So I'm putting 4 units on Nikolai Højgaard to win, 3 units on Thomas Dietrich to win, Ryan Fox to win for 2 units, and Robert McIntyre to win for 1 unit. Those odds are 16-1, 28-1, 35-1, and 125-1 for Bobby Mack there. Greg, let's hear your bets this week.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this event this week. I can't wait. Fuck. Like,
Make
oh
it
my
exciting
God.
with some winning bets
The
then, you fuck. Don't
PGA Tour,
complain.
pull your head out of your ass right
Don't
now. Like, get
complain.
it
Make it
together.
exciting. Make it exciting.
I am the most excited. This is fucked. This is how fucked golf is. I am the most excited for the event in Jeddah, the LIV event. That's the next event I have to look forward to before the Players. And the Players, I don't know, man. Like,
Hey, you chose to start a golf podcast in the
No,
year when this shit's happening. So that's on you, big boy.
Jeddah will be unreal, man. Rumor has it they'll be beheading players on 18. Anyone with ties to the LGBTQ plus community. will be beheaded in that be. So
Oh
it's
boy.
gonna be a hell
Oh
of a
boy.
event.
Okay, let's hear your best.
Yeah, so betting, I'm gonna go pretty basic. I Finau loves these nothing events, so I'm gonna go $5 outright win on him, and I'm gonna go with a very big long shot. So I feel like I got the favorite. I think Finau might be the favorite, and then
Yes.
my long shot pick out of nowhere is gonna be my rookie of the year pick, Max Gracerman, to win. I feel like he's gonna feel at home in this Korn Ferry event this week.
You know what his odds are?
They would be very, very
All
high.
right,
He has
I'll find
not
him.
had a good start to the year.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a good week for Thomas Dietrich, just like you. I'm gonna put $5 on him, and then I'm going to also put $5 on Taylor Pendrith at what is he at right now? Pendy is at
28-1, I see. Okay, got our bets in. That's how we make a boring event a little more exciting. There's like no one at this tournament. Like Finau's there.
I
Weygaard's
think
pretty good.
Sinao's like 20, maybe 28th ranked in the world, and he's the highest ranked player this week. So it's
Yeah.
kind of a bush event.
This isn't
Bush.
even. Have they ever had this bad of an event for something that's not a secondary event?
I don't know.
Oh
Thank
no. This
God they
is
have us to make golf interesting, because
Yeah.
holy Christ. If I
Yeah.
wasn't on a podcast saying stupid shit, golf would be dead right now.
This is tough. All right, let's move on to our final segment of the evening, cancel culture. Mike, I'm going to start with you. Cancel someone's ass.
Okay, I'm gonna spray out some numbers here, and I want you guys to try to figure out what I'm talking about.
Uh-oh.
So the numbers are 1, 3, 9, 18, and 128. What numbers are those?
I don't know, world rankings for some
Anybody?
live world rankings.
So that's Scottie
Oh.
Scheffler's strokes gained numbers for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's first tee to green, third in approach, ninth off the tee. The one that surprised me is that he's 18th around the green. So he's actually a he has a very, very he's a very good chipper and pitcher, and he's 128th in putting. So I think you know where I'm going with this. I'm canceling Scottie Scheffler's putter. I'm not canceling Scottie Scheffler, I'm just canceling his putter. He needs to either go to the claw, go to the broomstick, or go left-handed. I don't care which one he goes to, but any of those options are going to be better than coming dead last in the field and putting week after week. People don't understand. This guy is on like a historic ball striking run, and he would be winning. It'd be unfair in tournaments if he was just putting mediocre, but he's putting like an absolute Helen Keller right now.
Yeah, we're losing out on potentially like the best winning percentage since Tiger if he could putt half decent, right?
And he used to be so boring until he started dominating. And then it was like, holy shit, I want to see someone dominate. And he started last year off so hot, and his putting wasn't great, but he was treading water, and then it just fell off a planet. He's never been a good putter by any means, but over the past year, it's been so bad. So love
Hey,
that. Love
change
that
something.
cancel.
Change to a mallet. Like, change your grip. Do something. Like, you can't just keep doing this week after week.
Rory suggested that. Rory was on the broadcast in the booth, and he suggested that he mallet. So
Yeah, I'm canceling the In-N-Out chef this week, for basically putting a hit out on. I think he's either a hired hitman. Either way, it was definitely, if it was a joke, that's a sick joke. Undercooking somebody's meat and almost killing them, public humiliation. I hope Tiger sues him. Yeah, shitting your pants on a PGA event is a tough look for the GOAT. So I hope they go after him. I hope there's legal action taken, and hopefully he loses his job at In-N-Out Burger.
Okay, well, you fucking stole mine because we have
Oh
such
shit,
elite
sorry.
minds, Craig, that I think alike, and actually I hate that I think alike like you because you're a fucking idiot. So
I
I am
had a
canceling.
1.08 GPA one semester at SFU. I'm not that stupid.
Yeah, I need a trip to Home Depot now, learning that we took the same major winners in the first podcast. Now I've got the same cancel culture as you, but I'll reiterate Craig's point here. I'm canceling the whole In-N-Out chain, all right? You can't just Tiger is the goat, all right? I'll say he is a goat. And to make him sick is animal abuse is what that is. So In-N-Out chain, you are
I
canceled
like that.
for making the goat sick. All right.
I
I wanted
like
to see
that.
him play on the weekend. Couldn't see it because In-N-Out can't get their shit figured out and has given the goat the shits. So anyway, that's cancel culture. That's another podcast in the books. Not our finest, not our cleanest. I won't lie. We had some audio issues, but another good week chopping it up with the
Hey, we're
fellas.
gonna bounce back next
Hey,
week, though.
we need a bounce back bogey at the Vedanta
That was a
Mexico
triple this
Telus
week.
Santa Fe.
Nothing some good, nothing some good editing can't fix, Greg.
Good shit, boys. All right. Thanks for listening. We will see you all next week.
Peace.
See you, boys.
When I walk beside her, I am the better man. When I look to leave her, I always stagger back again. Once I built an ivory tower so I could worship from above. When I climbed down to be set free, she took me in again. There's a big hot sun beating on the big people in a big hot world. When she comes to greet me, she is mercy at my feet. Yeah, when I see a pin her charm, she just throws it back at me. Once I dug an early grave to find a better land, she just smiled and laughed at me and took her blues back again. It's a big hot sun beating on the big by my side. When I try to understand, she just opens up her hands. Tried to warn her, I turned to see her.